Welcome to Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. We're a group of law enforcement professionals that talk about today's news and issues, but we do it from a law enforcement perspective. And I'm going to introduce the chief to you, Chief Joel Schultz. He's retired, and he is currently residing somewhere in a bunker shelter in Colorado. I know it's pretty lit up there for the bunker. But thanks for being on the show, Chief. Appreciate it. Hey, a shout out to our sponsors, guys. Please support our sponsors. They go to the great lengths to bring this quality content to you. We have our title sponsor at Gauls.com. And don't forget the discount code. It's Radio15. They get 15% off your next order at Gauls.com. Also, our satellite sponsor, ComplianceTechnologies.com. We have GunLearn.com, MyMedicare.live, SafeguardRecruiting.com, and TwoBells.com that built a new online store at LeoRoundtable.com. Also, a shout out to all the guys that are letting us use their network to make the show happen and get the word out there. We got Brian Burns with the Tampa Free Press at TampaFP.com, Ray Dietrich with FormerLawman.com, and our very own Travis Shades with LawOfficer.com. So thanks to all those entities for helping make the show happen. And if you guys are looking for ways to watch our show, obviously we're on radio. We're on 47 radio stations, but we're also on podcast. I mean, if there's a podcast outlet, we're going to be on it, including Spotify, Apple iTunes, and then we're on social media, Rumble, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Truth Social. I said Twitter, X. So go to leoroundtable.com, look at the top header to see, they get access to everywhere we're at, dates, times, locations, channel numbers, all that good stuff. Now, I don't have all the stories in front of me right now, so I'm going to start off with the main topic. And then after I start off with that, we'll go ahead and I'll go ahead and read off the titles for the rest of the stuff that we're going to be talking about. But I did want to start off with talking about something that's rather important, and it's about Police Week. You know, we talked about Police Week last week, and today's Monday, but, you know, typically the ceremony is on the 15th. And according to my math, that would have been on Friday, which is really a great way to, like, end the week, because normally around the 12th is when things start. And you've got the candlelight vigil, which is one of the most special things that goes on. I mean, that's, they read the names out. You've got the blue laser. It's in Judiciary Square. Everybody's holding this candlelight at nighttime. It's just absolutely beautiful. And you've got about 25 to 40,000 cops there. It's just great. So at globalordnancenews.com and the Tampa Free Press at TampaFP.com, they've got two articles covering this, and it says, "We can honor that sacrifice. Advance pays tribute to fallen officers at the 45th Peace Officers Memorial Service." So, you know, we were wondering who was going to be there. So I believe that Trump was in China at the time. I know that we were getting all the updates on China. So I don't, at best, maybe he was on the plane coming back, but I don't think there was any way possible for him to have been there. But I'm happy with J.D. Vance. Hopefully you are too, Chief Schultz. I was pretty pleased to hear that he was there. You know, it's really luck of the draw. You know, you have some presidents that really don't really embrace law enforcement, and they don't really make it an important effort to try to be there the keynote speaker. You know, I've been so many police weeks, and I've seen that happen so many times. And sometimes you just expect it. You know, what do you think about J.D. Vance, Chief Schultz?
Well, I tell you, whatever arguments anybody might have with the Trump administration, they are definitely pro-law enforcement. I was so not surprised, but disappointed that the Democrats in Congress refused to sign on to, a resolution honoring police officers. It was just a disgusting retreat into their anti-police sentiment. So this is very refreshing. The last time I was in Police Week was, and I was surprised when I looked back on my calendar, was during the first Trump administration, and Bill Barr was the main speaker for the candlelight service, which was great before he left the administration.
Right. For the candlelight.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
He was the keynote. So in answer to your question about Vance, I think his words were great. And I think they were sincere. They were, you know, he wasn't trying to get any political favors with anybody. He was just speaking the truth about the dedication and sacrifice of America's law enforcement. So I was very pleased.
Yeah. You know, just in case, and I'm only saying this just in case there's anybody that has an issue with it being Vance instead of Trump, you know, the president of the United States is the president of the United States. Sometimes things pop up. We've got all the stuff going on with Iran. The China meeting, I believe, was extremely important. And look, J.D. Vance likely, you know, very well between him and Marco Rubio might be our next president. So I have, you know, please embrace the fact that he was there. In the article, it talks about, and for people who really don't know what Police Week is, families, law enforcement leaders, and officers gathered at the U.S. Capitol on May 15th, which would have been Friday. This is leading up at the tail end of the entire week that we call Police Week. And so on May 15th, you've got the official ceremony. It's the 45th Annual National Peace Officers Memorial Service, and it honors the fallen law enforcement officers and the loved ones that they left behind. And it is a very respectful ceremony. The people up front that are escorted by honor guards from all over the country, even sometimes out of the country, they sit up front. They have special seating for the keynote. Glenda Lehman, National President for the Fraternal Order Police Auxiliary, open the service by recognizing the families, colleagues, and the communities that were impacted by the line of duty deaths. And this year, the National Police Week observances, they included the adding on of 363 names to the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial. That included 109 officers who died in the line of duty in 2025 and 254 from previous years that they have vetted and decided to add those names as well. Now, Vice President J.D. Vance, as we just talked about, delivered the keynote address. He told surviving families that their loved ones' sacrifices would not be forgotten. This is important enough that I want to quote what J.D. Vance said, and Chief Schultz already alluded to it. Quote, "It is the greatest honor that I could possibly have as your vice president to come here and say to these beautiful families, thank you, and I'm sorry." He goes on to say, "From the bottom of my heart, speaking for all the American people, Democrat, Republican, and independent, we love you. We're grateful to you." Wow. That's just amazing. Yeah.
You know, I thought it was really interesting that of those names that were added to the memorial, and I'll make another pitch. You guys need to make arrangements now to go to next year's Police Week. Go to the museum, go to the site, go to some of the ceremonies, and just watch Washington, D.C., fill up with cops and cops' families. It's just super inspirational. But of those names that were added, 254 were added that those deaths finally came to light, which to me speaks to the fact that there were so many decades when fallen police officers did not get any national recognition. So you know, to find out that somebody, you know, was killed in the line of duty in the 40s or 50s or even before that, and finally recognized and get their name etched is remarkable. And one of the things that one can do is you'll find the name of a police officer from your agency or your region on that memorial wall, and you can, you know, you can do an etching of it and take it back to your local department, and it's just super. The only thing that pains me a little bit about Police Week is so often, you know, when John Kennedy made the declaration for Police Week, he mentioned officers who were injured and disabled in the line of duty, as well as officers who died in the line of duty, and that often is just an asterisk in the you know, in the celebration. So I want to make sure that we honor all those that are suffering chronic pain and disabling injuries and had to give up their careers because they were hurt in the line of duty. And of course, that's multiple times of the number of officers who died in the line of duty. Even the public safety officer benefit, the PSOB, which gives a lump sum for families who lost a breadwinner in the line of duty, also provides for a payment for disabled officers as well, and provides a scholarship for the education of dependents that were left behind. So we just need to remember those guys and gals that are still limping around, lost their career, maybe lost their eyesight, lost mobility. And as I've said before, you know, I think most police officers have a realization of their mortality, and you know, it's kind of a cliche to say they're laying their lives on the line every day, and that's true, but I don't know that a lot of officers think about, am I willing to sacrifice my ability to walk, my ability to see, my ability to earn a living because of an injury that happens on duty. So we want to honor those folks as well.
That's a good point that that we often forget about. So I'm glad you brought that up, Chief. You know, the companion article of this talks about the White House backing the blue. It says that the Fed funds tied to law enforcement support, crackdown on cashless bail. So these are some of the things that are done in the background by the Trump administration that just kind of coincide with Police Week. It goes on to say the White House Wednesday issued a decisive set of executive directives that are aimed at restoring law and order and strengthening domestic law enforcement practices across the U.S. It says that, like I just mentioned, they were strategically timed to coincide with Police Week, which is kind of cool. Chief among the new directives is a mandate ordering the Department of Justice to seek the death penalty in federal prosecutions involving the intentional murder of local, state, and federal law enforcement personnel. Doesn't happen a lot, but at least they're going to be seeking the death penalty. The administration also announced a financial penalty system. This is interesting. It targets rogue municipal legal policies under the new guidelines issued on May 13, 2026. The federal government will freeze major federal public safety grant support, including, and it gives some grants for state and local jurisdictions if they refuse to abandon reckless cashless bail systems. In the executive policy, it explicitly identifies the elimination of cash bail as a primary driver of rising urban crime rates and repeat offenses, which I think is pretty cool. And it goes on, lastly, it talks about the 1033 program. They're reinstituting that so that we can give military surplus items and vest or whatever, you know, to the guys, to these, especially these smaller agencies that just don't have the budget for it, you know. And there's some people on the left and some folks that are upset about that, but I'm glad he did that. Hey, guys, it's time for our first commercial break. We'll cover this in just 1 second, what we just talked about. We'll be right back.
My family only cares about one thing, that I come home safe.
At Galls, every order begins with a promise. Made with purpose. Stitched for support. Backed with pride. Answered by dedicated hands. Delivering the standard you have sworn to uphold. We serve more than the mission. We serve the person. Each piece is engineered to help get our first responders through the shift and back home safe.
Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. We're joined by Dr. Joel Schultz, retired police chief. And, you know, we left off talking about, we just talked about Police Week, and then we talked about some of the, I guess, the history of what the Trump administration is actually doing for police. And he coincided a lot of these new directives with Police Week. I read off a list of some of the stuff, the cashless bail and some other stuff that they're talking, and also financial repercussions for people that don't get rid of it. Any commentary on that, Chief Schultz?
Well, those are important during certain Democrat administrations in the past. Some federal funding for law enforcement was still in effect, but it was often attached to strings like, you know, DEI or, you know, some of these social engineering things. And what cops need when they look for federal funding or outside funding is personnel, protective gear, vehicles, just stuff they need to do the job every day. And when you have funding that's tied to, you got to go to this class, you know, to make you a better human being. I'm not opposed to that, but it didn't address the essentials, which this new round of funding and priorities is the case. The other thing that I think was really just a politically cruel statement to the law enforcement community was this restriction on the 1033 military surplus stuff. And there's this, I've written a lot of articles about the so-called militarization of policing. And I've said, nobody wants an MRAP. Nobody wants what they really would like is a Bearcat or one of these other specifically designed law enforcement oriented rescue vehicles. But if you can get an MRAP, armored personnel carrier for $500 plus transportation, then that makes that accessible to cops. And, you know, people will say, well, why does a small department need an armored personnel character vehicle? We had a case over in the San Luis Valley, which is a small population, a lot of small agencies. And we had a parole officer that was pinned down under fire and was rescued by a surplus military vehicle that was an armored vehicle. So those things are very necessary. When I first started the National Center for Police Advocacy, which is kind of dormant right now because so many other organizations are doing good work that I wanted to participate in, I issued a public challenge. I said, if you can find me one armored police vehicle that has a machine gun attached to it, I will pay you cash. I can't remember what the reward was, $1,000 or $100 or something like that. Nobody could come up with, because that's not happening. You don't have police tanks with automatic weapons rolling through the streets of our cities. They are very useful, tactical. Every agency needs to have access to one. And the idea that we become militarized, and I share that philosophical concern, because we live in a democracy where we have to trust our police not to be, go on the offensive against ordinary citizens for political reasons. But those things are just really kind of essential stuff. And I still hear, I know when we had the Democratic convention in Denver, when Obama was nominated, there was a letter to the editor, more than one, in the Denver Post that said, we don't need these military looking officers out there on the streets causing people to engage in riotous behavior. And I'm like, okay, I don't think when a firefighter puts on bunker gear and rolls up with a $2 million police of fire fire engine, that causes fires. cops need protective gear.
Your facts, Chief, do not support the agenda.
Not the agenda of other administrations. That's right. Yeah. That's right.
Isn't that scary?
We knew we would. The pendulum always swings. We knew when we tromped on police officer rights, when we took away their equipment, when we made laws that persecuted cops, we knew the crime was going to go up. At least I did. And so the public tolerance for a lack of policing, a lack of effective policing and assertive policing, what was going to weigh on citizens and the people that need police protection the most, and the pendulum would swing back. So hopefully we're going to get back to a place of equilibrium where cops can do what only cops can do.
Well, thanks, Chief. We've also got Sharon Caudill weighing in, thanking you, Chief Schultz, for what you said, and that the people injured live with it every single day. So you've got your fan bases growing there. Let me do this. Let me just kind of whet the appetite of what we have coming up. We've got leaked intel. It used to be, secret intelligence. Now apparently it's out there. It warns of Cuban drone plots against Key West and Guantanamo, prompting local call for calm. We've got a betrayal in the shadows. FBI puts $200,000 bounty on an Air Force defector who fled where? To Iran. Yeah, I had to read that a couple times. Body camera video shows a Wayne County sheriff and a sheriff. These two guys are stabbed during a confrontation. And yeah, we're not done with stabbings. Then we got another body cam showing a Marion County deputy stabbed repeatedly in his chest during an ambush attack here in Florida. We got the Florida AG. We love him. He threatens to personally sue officials. And I said personally, not in their official capacity. Personally sue them after police tried to ban guns at a local festival in Florida. Then a Virginia gun ban ignites a firestorm as local prosecutor refuses to enforce and lawsuits start flying. So this is going to be some good stuff here. We've got less than a minute before we take our next commercial break. I just want to just touch on this briefly. This Tampa Free Press, TampaFP.com, leaked intel warns of Cuban drone plots against Key West, Guantanamo, prompting local call for calm. So apparently there have been intelligence reports revealing that they've acquired hundreds of military drones and recently discussed plans to launch these against the U.S. naval base at Guantanamo Bay, American military vessels, and potentially Key West, at the southern part of Florida. They've got Monroe County Sheriff's Office Sheriff Rick Ramsey weighing in on this, saying that he has not heard anything. He suspects that he would if there was any truth of that. They're wearing a wait and see attitude right now. I hope they get more information if there really are attack drones and 300 of them, like they say. So it's time for our second commercial break. We'll be right back. All right, guys, it's time to talk about Compliant Technologies at ComplianTechnologies.com. And they are committed to providing non-lethal solutions to help officers gain the upper hand safely and rapidly in a humane, low-optics manner, utilizing what they're called their CD3, which stands for Conductive Distraction and De-escalation Device Technology. Now, their flagship product, we all know by now, is called the Glove. It's not only helped officers tens of thousands of times, but they've actually had over 250,000 deployments. And guess what? No injuries, no deaths. It's an amazing stat. They've actually been able to achieve non-lethal status in an arena that predominantly can only offer less lethal results. And when it comes to weapons retention, transitioning to a sidearm or a conductive energy weapon, the Glove and ComplianTechnologies.com, they virtually eliminated weapons confusion. So stay ahead of the game with Compliant Technologies and the revolutionary CD3 that hundreds of agencies have already turned to nationwide. And take it from me, when it comes to safety, this is one of those common sense, hands-on solutions that's ever come along. Go to ComplianTechnologies.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host. We're joined by Dr. Joel Schultz, retired police chief. And, we got a comment from Betty Dunn saying the chief and I are great together. I always tell the chief it's a good thing I'm married, because if I wasn't, I'd be proposing to him, Betty. So I'm glad you picked up on that. So we got Alonzo, Laura, Jose. Jose, this, you should stay out of, hopefully you'll never be a police officer, because I don't think you have the mentality for it. So, we'll just leave it there.
But, give some airtime. What's he saying about us?
Well, I already got the block the user thing here, but nothing you want to see. So, yeah. Moving along here, and I know that we've got we were just talking about the Cuban military threats with the drones and stuff and the 300 drones. I don't know if there's any truth of that or not. It's interesting how they got the Monroe County Sheriff's Office involved in this thing to see whether there was any legitimacy to it. So I don't know if it's true or not, if the government's not communicating with the sheriff's office, or even if it would be a sheriff's office thing, even though they do have Key West, under their jurisdiction. Your thoughts?
Cuba is what, 90 miles from the coast of your state? And they've got Iranian military advisors down in Cuba. Russians are paying Cuba for soldiers to fight in Ukraine. And so it is definitely a national security threat. And I would point out that the role of local law enforcement in homeland security has hopefully has been recognized and enhanced since 9/11. And every jurisdiction, not every jurisdiction, is necessarily close enough to be threatened by a hostile nation like Cuba in relationship geographically to Florida. But I was in Hannibal, Missouri right after 9/11, and that's alongside the Mississippi. The Mississippi is regulated by a series of locks and dams, and those could potentially have been a target of destruction, because it would cause massive flooding if that system were so there are a lot of national security threats that really necessarily have to be monitored by local law enforcement. And I hope that the sheriff does get communication with national security officials on the federal level to be prepared and aware of the potential need for response and resources to combat these national security threats that get generated at a local level. When Timothy McVeigh decided that that Oklahoma City was going to be a great target because it was someplace where nobody thought there would be a domestic terrorist attack, it really opened our eyes, I hope, to the reality of the protective function of local law enforcement for national security issues.
Yeah, it's interesting. I know the CIA director just went down there, and I think he just pretty much read them the Riot Act and said, don't push that button, you know, don't make that mistake. I can only imagine what the U.S. response would be. So we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah.
Hopefully we won't have to find out. Moving along here, I'll tell you what, I'd like to go ahead, if it's okay, and just jump. Well, let me, you know what, I'm looking at this FBI defector thing and, you know, this Air Force defector. I want to, let's cover that first before we go to a story with a video component. So the Tampa Free Press at TampaFB.com, we got betrayal in the shadows. FBI puts a $200,000 bounty on an Air Force defector, a female who fled to Iran, where they're really not too fond of females. Just the craziest thing. And they've got her and her, you know, in her Air Force, you know, uniform picture. And then one, she's got her, you know, all of her, you know, her, she's, you know, clad in all that Iranian, you know, female with the attire that they have to wear. So the federal authorities, they've ramped up their search for former U.S. Air Force intelligence specialist, Monica Elfried Witt, by offering a $200,000 reward for her capture. Now, she served as a counterintelligence agent with high-level security clearances, stands accused of defecting to Iran and handing over classified national defense secrets that jeopardized the lives of her former colleagues. Now, this didn't happen just yesterday. This happened a while, but now they've just renewed efforts to get her. A grand jury in the District of Columbia, they indicted her back on February the 8th, but that was 2019, on charges including conspiracy to deliver national defense information to a foreign government. So that was, what, 7 years ago that happened. Now, according to the FBI, the El Paso native served in the military from 1997 to 2008. She worked as a government contractor until 2010. During that time, she had access to secret and top secret files, including the actual names of undercover intelligence officers that were working for the U.S. Now, that's kind of scary. Investigators say that her betrayal began in earnest in 2013. Now, that's when I retired 12 and a half years ago, is when she started doing this stuff. And that's when she actually fled to Iran. So she fled to Iran 12, 13 years ago. The indictment alleges that she used her specialized knowledge to help Iranian government target U.S. intelligence personnel and their families. So we haven't really heard a lot of that before this. Her actions are said to have directly benefited the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, which we're all familiar with now, and their current status. Along with Witt, the indictment charges four Iranian nationals who allegedly conducted a cyber campaign against U.S. intelligence assets using the information that she gave them. And while the four Iranians were part of the technical operation, she's the primary focus of the newly announced reward. So there is a renewed effort to grab her, and since they're in a world of hurt in Iran, and you know, $200,000 being offered to someone that knows where she is over there, or where they can, I'm assuming they want to just ideally take her out instead of bringing her back here, but that's got to be a lot of money. Chief Schultz.
You remember during a previous administration that the greatest threat to American security was white supremacists in the military?
That was right after the climate issue. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, this I suspect that this gal, it was just an enlisted person, right? Not a high ranking person, but somebody that had access. We see this a lot. It's not just the high dollar people that have access to super, super secret stuff, but it's contractors and enlisted people that have access to secret and top secret information, which it is a necessary evil, but it's certainly a vulnerability. I don't think that she joined the U.S. military and then turned on the U.S. military. I think she probably didn't enlist. She infiltrated and sought out these kinds of opportunities. It's hard for us to imagine why somebody would want to go in that direction, particularly a female, as you point out, to go to Iran. But there's a lot of that potential leak out there. So, you know, she's called a defector, and that's the technical definition. But I think she successfully got to where she wanted to get and then accomplished her mission and then got some kind of reward from one of our enemies. And hopefully her life right now is not what she hoped it would be.
I hope so. You know, it's interesting the date, the dates from this when she started doing this back in, you know, she left the military in 2010. They say that she really got, you know, sort of leaking, doing the bulk of this stuff in 2013. That's I just wonder, you know, how much damage is the damage done, or how much damage could information that's that dated possibly be doing in today? And, you know, I wonder why the renewed effort all of a sudden is. I know there's things we don't know, but it makes me really curious why all of a sudden are they offering a couple hundred grand, you know, to get her now, you know, which is, you know, she's been gone out of the military since 2010. And they said that she started high rolling on this thing in 2013. And
I had the same question, you know, what value would the information that she obtained 10 or 15 years ago be to our enemies? So, yeah, there are things that we don't know. I do think, you know, Scott Stires the other day was talking about the necessity of making examples of these traitors. And so maybe this is part of a new program of awareness to make sure that these people get publicly outed and publicly punished.
Yeah. We'll see. I for one would want to be careful how I say this, but I would not be that supportive of bringing her back over here to try or whatever. I would rather just take care of things there in Iran where she's at, you know, and let her, you know, let it end there. You know?
And that might have already happened, you know, with what's happened to their leadership and folks. We apparently have some good intelligence assets in Iran to find out the, you know, targets and who's who. So if she's still alive, I hope she does get captured.
Yeah. Instead of proof of life, we want another kind of proof. But well, interesting. Hey, we've got our story with a video component coming up. We're about 45 seconds away from our next commercial break, so let me whet the appetite on this. We've got a body camera video shows a Wayne County sheriff and his sergeant being stabbed during a confrontation.
I went out there to speak to them about what you guys were doing to the gang, and they called the cops on me. I didn't do anything. I didn't do anything. They left me in there, and the house is full of cocaine.
You need to stop.
I'm not stopping. Hey, guys!
Yeah, that shit's cool, huh? That shit's cool, huh? Fucking stab, motherfucking cool.
Get away, get away.
Stab me.
Excuse me.
Get
right there.
Get away. Fuck that. 433, 500. Give me a squad. I've been stabbed.
I kind of found it a little hard to watch, but it's a good learning video. You can learn from this. And you always, when you see stuff like this, you always want to take something away. So stick with us, guys. We're going to cover this right after we come back from the commercial break. All right, guys, it's time to talk about GunLearn at GunLearn.com. And if you guys are not familiar with GunLearn, it is the first and only company that offers a step-by-step program that takes you from your present knowledge level to become a safe, accurate, and certified firearm specialist. Now, the firearm certification that we're talking about, even if you got it 5 years ago, there's a new deal going on, and now it's worth college credit. So GunLearn.com, they've actually partnered with Smarter Degree and their university partners to where that firearm specialist certification is now worth college credits. And they've been doing this back since 1996. They've been teaching everything that LEOs, which is law enforcement officers, they need to know about firearms and ammunition to all facets of law enforcement. You can actually start today with online training, or you can sign up to attend a live seminar. And if you have your own agency, if you're chief or sheriff, you can actually host a seminar for absolutely no cost. It's an amazing opportunity. You can go to GunLearn.com to get more information. Again, that is GunLearn.com. You'll be glad that you did. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host. We're joined by Dr. Joel Schultz, retired police chief. We left off talking about a body-worn camera video showing a Wayne County sheriff and his sergeant. They're both being stabbed during a confrontation. So we're in West Salem, Ohio. Newly released body cam footage. It shows the moment Wayne County Sheriff's Office Sheriff Thomas Bollinger, him and his sergeant, they're both ended up being stabbed during this incident that happened. Now, the sheriff, Ballinger, and the sergeant, Dan Broom, they got injured on Tuesday after authorities said that they responded to a report of a guy acting erratically, identified as Chad Palmer. And there were a bunch of 911 calls from residents reporting that this bad guy, Palmer, that he was threatening people in the area. And it doesn't say that anything about him having a knife or anything, but according to the officials, a deputy initially responded, issued him a disorderly conduct warning. And it's kind of like that warning you were talking about doing earlier in the show, Chief, I guess. And the sheriff and the sergeant were on patrol, and they're called back because this Palmer guy is spotted walking alongside the road. And so they get there, And Palmer goes, hey, they called the cops on me. I didn't do anything. And when now it's the sheriff in the body cam, you see the sheriff walking up to the bad guy, telling him to stop. And the guy says, I'm not stopping. But we're watching the body cam from the sergeant. I don't know that the sheriff even was wearing a body cam, but the sergeant's filming everything. And so the bad guy, he says, I'm not stopping. And so the guy says all of a sudden, Palmer, the bad guy, hey guys, before he just turns around and he starts running right at the sheriff and the sergeant. And so you see the sergeant whose body cam we're watching grab the bad guy as he's trying to get to the sheriff, and he's stabbing him. And it happens really super fast. And so our sergeant gets stabbed in the groin of all places, and the sheriff ended up getting stabbed in the arm. After the attack, the bad guy runs from the scene, and now they have a massive search. So he was, you know, I mean, you know, you got a guy with a groin stab wound, you know, if he tries to run and chase, he's just going to bleed out, you know. So at least they, you know, the language of the sergeant, he was so upset that he got stabbed and in the groin, he's got to put a tourniquet in really high up. And, you know, he was just, couldn't believe that it freaking happened to him. I felt this pain. They later arrest the bad guy because he's inside of a shed hiding from police. But when he's doing that, he's streaming a video to social media, and he douses himself with gasoline before they take him into custody. And court records show that he had a lengthy criminal history, including convictions for drug possession, assault, and theft. It talks about some other stuff in a McDonald's and a chase that he did and some other stuff. It says the sheriff and the sergeant are both recovering and taking time off. Or the sheriff said that the sergeant was recovering, taking time off. I guess the sheriff, it sounds like he's already back at work. Dr. Schultz?
Well, I don't have any criticism of the officers here. I think there are a couple things that... I'm a fan of giving PA commands because distance is your friend. And maybe, you know, over the loudspeaker before they got out and made contact with this guy to just go ahead and tell him to show his hands or whatever. And, would be interesting to see, what Travis Yates with his, focus training about pre-attack indicators, or attack indicators, would say about his body language. A lot of times we think that maybe a retreat or a verbal declaration, you're not going to arrest me, or I didn't do anything wrong. Those are cues. That's cue language. But sometimes what looks like a passive resistance or a retreat is actually a staging for an attack, which was the case in this guy. I'm not saying it was predictable, but we need to get more and more sensitive about what resistance looks like and whether that is a prelude to a full-on attack. So his retreat, his having his hands hidden, should raise some hackles. I think also I'm very grateful for our increase in trauma and blood bleeding control training that has happened over the last several years. You know, we used to say, oh, don't do the tourniquet unless it's a life or death situation. And now we've realized that that was based on Civil War thinking about medical treatment. And so now almost all cops have got accessibility to a tourniquet and have learned how to do that. So I'm sure that saved his life. The other thing I would say to officers is, and this has been found true in a lot of cases, if you're 10, 15 minutes away from EMS arrival, get that cop in a patrol car and get him to a hospital. You know, we mostly have been told you never transport a wounded person in a patrol car, liability and blah, blah, blah. But I think this is the case where it would have been a good case for scoop and run. Get that officer in the backseat of the car to get him to help.
I love it. You're right. You're absolutely right. And thank God, you know, the stat, we would have a lot more officers on that wall in D.C. in Judiciary Square. We didn't have these tourniquets and the training that we have today.
Yeah, I think so.
Our next one, rumble.com. This is Butter. I think we got just enough time to get this one in. Body cam shows Marion County deputy stabbed repeatedly in his chest during an ambush attack. Proceed to red.
Hey, partner. Hey, buddy. Hey, motherfucker. Okay. 67, 62, Marion.
Any signal 55?
26.
Hispanic male, green shirt. He's running through the woods right now. I believe he's got a knife. Something in his left hand. I can't tell what it is. Lay down on the ground now! Get on the ground! Get on the ground now! Drop what you got and get on the ground now! He's got a knife. He's got a knife. Get on the ground now! He's got a knife. Yeah, because he come at me fast. I almost shot him earlier. Get on the ground!
Get on the ground! Get on your stomach! Get on your stomach!
Watch that knife.
Get on your stomach!
Watch the knife.
Put your hands behind your back! Hands behind your back! Don't even
move! Don't reach for anything!
Don't even move!
I'm going to kick that
knife
away.
Don't even move! If you move and you grab that knife, you're going to get shot. Do you understand me?
I'll kick the knife away.
So we're in Donnell in Florida, not far from where I'm at. A man was arrested after repeatedly stabbing a deputy in the chest on Wednesday, according to the Marion County Sheriff's Office. Deputies responded to a report of a suspicious person. When the deputy gets there, he exits his vehicle and ends up getting ambushed by the suspect identified as Herberto Medina Marquez. The deputy sees the guy when he rolls up. The deputy gets out of his car and the bad guy is walking on the other side of the car back towards the rear. So the deputy walks to the rear of his car, not expecting this, and the guy all of a sudden rounds the corner and starts running to the deputy. He's got the knife in his hand. Deputy falls backwards on the ground. The guy's on top of the deputy, stabbing him in the chest. We got a body cam view of this stuff. Then bad guy turns around with the knife and he takes off. And it takes the deputy a while to get his gun unholstered, get up off the ground. I don't see any blood or anything. Then they find the guy later on. The guy appears in the street. Now we have two deputies, including the one that had been, stabbed, and they taught the guy down. The guy gets in a prone position, hands behind his back, get him handcuffed and stuff. But then in the squad car, he says, "I should have killed you. You know that, right?" And you can hear this at the end of the video. So deputy's lucky to be alive. And if it had not been for the ballistic vest, he likely, if he was still alive, he would have been severely injured, no doubt. Chief Schultz.
I tell you, these blitz attacks from close quarters is something that's really hard to train for. We have so many force options and arrest control options that sometimes our brain takes a little while. Is this a retreat situation? Is this an attack situation? Is this a firearms? Is this a taser? When you have split seconds, people talk about seconds, but these decisions are split second decisions. I don't know that there's a way to adequately train for blitz attacks, but those are so deadly, so fast, and so overwhelming to the mental process, to the decision making process, that it's really hard to survive. I would remind people, I saw a taser out at some point. I don't think a taser should have been an option during any part of this episode, even the arrest point.
Yeah. You're right. At the end, when they found him again after he'd already stabbed, yeah.
Yeah. So also the public needs to understand that ballistics vests are not designed to stop stabbings. They'll protect you in a slice. They obviously slowed down the attack, saved this officer's life, but they're not really designed to be knife resistant because they diffuse force. Back in the early days, so some of the vests wouldn't even necessarily be guaranteed to work for a 22 because it's just such a pinpoint that the vest material doesn't have time to distribute the force. And so this officer was definitely had an angel riding in their car that day. The other thing that I would say is don't chase anybody into the woods. If you can't see them, if you can't see them, don't go in the woods. Get yourself safe. Call for some help. I love that more and more departments have the capacity to deploy a drone so that they can kind of survey the area from the air. But don't chase somebody into the woods.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And with drone technology now, with thermal technology, good luck hiding, in the woods. So yeah. You know, not everybody's got all the same equipment, but and then canines. Not that I don't want to release a canine on a guy that I know's got a lethal weapon, but they're great at tracking, you know, too. Great show today, Chief. I don't care what anybody says. You had a great day today. So,
well, I hope everybody is smarter by the end of the hour. But I tell you, the time has flown.
It does fly by the show, especially when you and I get to talk. And so I do want to mention the Wounded Blue at thewoundedblue.org. Lieutenant Rainey Sutton's 501c3, helping cops out in the world of hurt that I suffer from things like PTSD and other issues. So, guys, please check out the Wounded Blue at thewoundedblue.org. Also, our sponsors, thanks to Gauls, our title sponsor at Gauls.com. Don't forget the discount code radio15, 15% off. ComplianceTechnologies.com, GunLearner.com, and Medicare.live. We've got SafeguardRecruiting.com and TwoBells.com. We'll see you guys back tomorrow, 12 noon Eastern.